Well, Mike, the wave of repressive legislation prohibiting what teachers can teach and what students can read and learn has been termed the new McCarthyism. I think we're still looking for the right term to capture these various reactionary laws passed in state legislatures, prohibiting teachers, including college teachers, from taking up topics offensive to many white nationalists and their political allies. Let's start with Florida's so-called anti-woke laws. In 2022, with the support of Governor Ron DeSantis, the Florida state legislature adopted a law known as the Stop Woke Act, an acronym standing for Wrong to Our Kids and Employees. So, Mike, can you unpack this anti-woke act? Tell us what's in it before we turn to resistances to the law, including legal challenges.
It's really an effort to legislate good feelings.
That doesn't sound so bad, right? Is
We
that
all like to
supposed to
feel
put us to
good.
sleep? It's a national sedative, right? To keep us asleep from being awake.
The facts, like the fact that no black people could get a housing loan in the 30s and 40s explicitly by law, is something that makes people now feel uncomfortable. Because the basis of wealth in the United States is your home. And there are all sorts of black people who were completely qualified financially for loans, but were explicitly banned by statutes from ever owning a home. So that's an unpleasant fact if you're a white person and you like to think that everybody is treated equally and that we live in a colorblind society. So rather than deal with the implications of that state of the law, it's better to ban any discussion of it, and let's pretend the law never existed.
I mean, part of what's striking about this and some of the other cousin legislation that's been promoted and passed by conservative legislatures is how it uses the language of racial justice to basically fight racial justice. Can you speak to that aspect of this act?
Yeah, it's like we hear over and over again Martin Luther King's statement about we need to be a colorblind society. And it's used in a boomerang fashion to get rid of any effort that would make things more equal or take into account the fact that for centuries, this country was built on the slavery and suppression of black people and the extermination of natives. That's just what happened here. Even at the Supreme Court level, I know the first day of new Justice Jackson's appearance on the court last October was a discussion of Alabama's voting suppression laws and a challenge to the way they were drawn, which would have concentrated black people in one particular district, allowing white people to have a slight majority in several other districts. And she came out against the notion that we should be colorblind in this process, or pretend to be, because as she said, why shouldn't race be considered when drawing U.S. congressional district maps, given our long-running history of state-backed racist voter suppression and housing segregation? That's the reality. In fact, for originalists looking at the Constitution, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were passed in order to enable black people to become an effective part of our society. They were in the past in the wake of the Civil War, which was fought about slavery and the economy of the South, which then hinged on and required slavery in order to prosper. That's a historical truth. But what these new laws want is to keep people from having to feel squirmy and unpleasant about this reality and never to be forced to talk about it or consider it.
So the case before the Supreme Court around affirmative action also has its parallel legislative dramas in many states around what's called diversity, equity, and exclusion programs in schools and in workplaces that have been around for a long time, but they're kind of the last bastion of affirmative action and attending to affirmative action in schools and workplaces and encouraging diversity in hiring and in and programming in schools and university. So that's Another proud frontier that DeSantis is proclaiming himself as on the vanguard of dismantling these DEI programs, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, and making them against the law in workplaces and schools in Florida. How do you see that as part of this as well, and related to what the Supreme Court is doing around affirmative action?
The right is losing the cultural war. They're losing it badly. Corporations have routinely now report on how well they're doing in terms of diversity and inclusion and how well they're doing in terms of climate change. This has become normal. It's called ESG, the environment, the social and governmental values. Now, of course, much of this is just paying lip service and isn't really sincere, but they've got to pay that lip service. It's not like they can avoid it. So these ideas are crushing the white nationalists who want to restore us all to the 1950s, when men were men and women were women, and black people were all quiet except in the South, and there was no problems outside the South.
That's how they portray the world.
Yeah, parenthetically, the reason why the 1950s were so wonderful that no one ever talks about is the fact that the United States was the only part of the world undamaged by war. So that meant that we had the only functioning factories, that we could set the prices for raw materials because nobody else was buying iron or steel. We could set the prices for finished goods because nobody else was making refrigerators or anything. And as a result, a union member in Los Angeles could not only support his whole family, he could send his kids to college and even buy a little beach house in Hermosa Beach. And a lumber worker here in Oregon could easily support his whole family and send his kids to college. Well, that was a very brief moment because societies like Germany and Japan have been leveled. But they're quite capable of making factories. And when they did finally reconstruct themselves, they did so with newer factories than what we had. And the economy has, we have spilled off into the rest of the world and are now competing with dozens and dozens of other countries on every single level and don't have that uniquely privileged position anymore. And that we're no longer protected by oceans anymore either. So if there's another war, we won't skate so clearly as we did in World War II.
Yeah, the economic shifts are always in the background of these culture wars and
They
intersect
are.
them in very complicated ways. Let's talk about the legal challenges to the anti-woke law that DeSantis so proudly proclaims in his presidential campaign, that the ACLU and NAACP mounted a legal challenge to that law. Can you tell us about that and where
Well,
that's
they're
at?
very effective legal challenges, and they're prevailed. Right now, the Don't Say Gay law is was suspended in the district court, and when the state appealed to the 11th Circuit, a very conservative court in Florida, didn't get anywhere. They were asked that the law be immediately put into effect, and it's not. So right now, it's on hold for months or even years while the Court of Appeal considers it. But that's not the point of passing these laws. They are deliberately vague. They attack the First Amendment squarely on by being vague and by exercising viewpoint discrimination. That is to say, you can't express certain views because they might make somebody feel uncomfortable. These are all classic issues of the First Amendment. But the point is to make people nervous. The vagueness itself is a goal.
It's
It's a goal.
not just lazy lawyering.
Not at all. Not at all. It means that it spreads a chilling effect. So, like, it's a tremendous portion of people around the country, teachers, as many as one out of four, have changed their policies on what they will teach as a result of the fear of legislation.
Because
So
some
there
of
are.
those that some of this legislation includes criminal penalties for teachers that are highly unlikely. It's kind of like the abortion laws that scare the hell out of people and push in a more conservative, risk-averse direction, even within the latitude of the laws themselves.
Well, that's true. And so the laws, even though the laws are bad now and are not technically in effect, the University of Central Florida has drastically changed its curricula. We know about the AP, the College Board has drastically cut back on its African American studies components. There are changes everywhere, and particularly among grade school teachers who are they're freaked out by the possibility of suffering criminal penalties or civil penalties, or worse yet, losing their jobs. So the laws are having an effect, without a doubt. And even though the legal challenges have been very solid and pretty effective.
Can you say a bit more about the legal status of these laws that have been stayed by the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals and are in, they haven't acted on them, but they're in a kind of limbo state that hovers over people in very intimidating ways. But nonetheless, that's a kind of success to prevent these laws from being implemented.
Exactly. I mean, you've summarized it. It's kind of an uneasy limbo. They haven't been affirmed or denied. But like the University of Central Florida has removed all anti-racist statements from its departmental websites. It's had a profound effect, even though it's not technically the law of the land.
You know, the American Association of University Professors, AUP, including the Florida chapter, has also called out administrators and politicians, but also university administrators in the state, for not resisting these laws and not standing up to them. So I think we're all aware, those of us who are paying attention, to what DeSantis represents, his view of the world. But he has many collaborators and many who facilitate that kind of vision. And I think that AUP is calling for teach-ins and continuing resistance on campuses and legal challenges to these laws. Do you see any other hope for hard times here in terms of successful agitation as well as legal challenges?
Let's stop here and note how far LGBTQ people have come in the last 50 years from being, you know, absolutely banned by laws, as well as being humiliated whenever they would come out, to something that's widely accepted, particularly by young people now. It's a kind of an option that's now seen as one of the many ways of being human. It's
and gender fluidity, young people are more comfortable with gender fluidity and moving away from a kind of rigid way of looking at gender differences, and are more comfortable with the fight against racism. So in a way, this is not so much about young people being uncomfortable with this history, but their parents and elders who,
exactly,
in many cases, don't want young white kids either to know about the history of these struggles and the kind of alliances that were so inspiring to many of us growing up, and as we finally learned this history and wanted to join forces with marginalized groups in fighting for a better world.
But what strikes me vividly, with particularly when I looked at these books, is the notion of intersectionality. 40% of the banned books have to do with sexual issues, and 40% have to do with race issues. But they're both concepts that are being banned. But I think it's provided us with an opportunity. And what's happening is critical race theory, which was an obscure notion dreamed up in Harvard and UCLA law schools in the 90s, is now the idea that there are laws that contain within them, without using the word black or white, an inherent form of racism, is getting more widely known and more widely accepted. And the whole concept itself is no longer buried away in academia, but it's in the streets. So there are opportunities presented by all these laws of us to push back in the same way that Margaret Sanger and people pushed back against the Comstock laws and ultimately prevailed in the 1920s and 30s.
Well, I want to conclude today by sending our congratulations to the graduating class of the new school in Florida, and encourage people to go online and share in the video that's available that of their wonderful celebratory and joyous alternative graduation that campus that has been basically taken over by DeSantis and the Florida legislature and their efforts to turn it into a Christian nationalist paragon of education, stripped of any critical thinking whatsoever. And the students are fighting and faculty are fighting that. And one expression of that resistance was their celebration, their graduation celebration last week, which is just delightful to watch online. And these brave students in their full regalia, rainbow regalia, it was kind of street theater and serious solemn ceremony at the same time. And they are to be congratulated, and they're the hope for the future and for a better world. So we'll end by raising a glass to them.
Right on.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. We'll continue to follow this.
We will, certainly. It's going to be a part of our lives for the next decade.
Whether we like it or not.